The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful day here at Edstone. The sun is shining. Well, we had day three. This was one I actually got to see a fair bit of because I happened to wake up a little early. It's at the middle of the night over here, the Democratic convention, and it's interesting. Still not much of a sign of Joe Biden. There were some references made to the vice president, the former vice president, the presidential candidate. I think Kellyanne Conway summed it up best. She said, you hear Donald Trump's name at the Dem convention more than you hear Joe Biden. So that's the platform, basically. It's rabidly anti-Trump, and at best, I think it's passively supportive of Joe Biden. Last night was the keynote speaker was Barack Obama. And of course, the media loved it. Rave reviews. Rave reviews coming from an overwhelmingly, radically left-swinging media. Newsbusters had a report recently that the media is 150 times more negative about Donald Trump than they are Joe Biden. 150 times more. Can you believe this? That's how overwhelmingly in the tank they are for Joe Biden. And really, it's more for Barack Obama, because as I said the other day, whether it's Barack Obama or his wife Michelle, whenever they speak, the media, remember, they swoon. Think about the spirit of Antiochus. Again, God tells us to judge by the fruits, to look at what they've actually done. But it says about Antiochus in Daniel 8, verse 23, in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance, and understanding dark sentences, shall stand up. And this is all brought on, as my fathers explained before, because of the transgressors coming to the full. Our nations are just so full of sin in this end time. And so we open ourselves up to these vicious attacks. Verse 25 in Daniel 8 says, and through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. Well, he comes in talking about peace and unity and bipartisanship, to put it in the political language. Smooth-sounding words. He acts like he wants peace. And yet, in the case of this prophecy, he's lying. He's not telling the truth. You can look at Daniel 11, I think it's verse 21, where it talks about him coming in by flatteries. Using flatteries. We'll get to some of Mr. Obama's speech here in just a second. But step back for a moment again, as I said yesterday, and think about what Joe Biden, what he has in front of him, what he has to win over 70 million Americans. 70 million Americans have to sign on to his platform. Now, he's going to get tens of millions of votes. There's no doubting that. But 70 million? Which ones? Which ones is he gonna peel away from Donald Trump? Donald Trump, 4 years ago, he won Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania, basically because he promised to do it differently than Barack Obama. He was going to bring those jobs back, those jobs that Obama said were gone for good. And so he came in with a message, with a vision. No, they're not gone. We'll bring them back. And so when you bring in the Obamas and say we're just going to get it back to, I guess, the way we had it in 2016, are the voters in particularly Ohio, that was a huge swing compared to 2012. Obama won that easily in 2012. Or maybe it was the other way around. He might have won it in a close race, but then it was a huge swing in the favor of Donald Trump by 2016. And then he won Wisconsin with a slim majority. I think it was the same in Michigan and Pennsylvania. But a platform that's just rabidly anti-Trump, that's pretty much it. And no mention of law and order. Nothing. In fact, there's praise for what they're still calling the peaceful protest in Portland, in Seattle, in Chicago, in New York. We'll get to some of that later as well. Barack Obama praising the protesters, praising the youths. The youths that, as he said, have taken the lead this summer. But that's like the elephant in the room. Americans by the millions are out there thinking or saying, what about law and order? What about protecting the streets of America? What about protecting American citizens? What about protecting their property? If you're in the Democratic convention, you're not hearing much about that at all. And then, of course, outside of all this, you have the many, many polls that are saying that Vice President Biden is not only in the lead, he's way out in front. And as I said yesterday, that's not even the truth. But how many voters are going to be lulled to sleep thinking that, like they might have thought in 2016, oh, Hillary Clinton has this in the bag. And then, just to, again, hit at a few things off the top of my head, the enthusiasm factor. Do you think the supporters, I don't want to just get too far into the weeds of the politics here, but do you think the supporters of Donald Trump are enthusiastically supportive of him still? Or just compare it to those of Joe Biden, even the ones speaking at his convention. He's hardly mentioned by name. If you're AOC or Michelle Obama, now Barack Obama did mention him a few times last night. But here he comes in with these smooth words, these smooth sounding words. And yet what has been the track record? Thomas Sowell, the conservative black commentator, he said about the speech, Barack Obama's political genius is his ability to say things that will sound good to people who have not followed the issues in any detail, regardless of how obviously fraudulent what he says may be to those who have. It's so obviously fraudulent. If you just know a little bit about the issues. But as you can see, in looking at the cities of America today, there's millions and millions and millions of people who know nothing about the issues. They just hear the words. And of course, those words, those sweet, smooth-sounding words, can turn more vicious when the subject is Donald Trump because, well, the media, they've been there saying just how horrible this man has been for the last 4 or 5 years. But this was, if you look at Barack Obama's speech last night, this was his most vicious verbal attack against President Trump, easily. Now, I've always felt like that before last night, he refrained from sometimes even mentioning Donald Trump because he feared the counterpunch, something that Donald Trump's pretty good at. But last night, Barack Obama took the gloves off. And he went after Donald Trump. And of course, the speech, too, is just oozing with sanctimony. He was preaching. And of course, it was full of blatant hypocrisy as well. CNN said it was a history-shaking speech. A national emergency. This is a threat, an existential threat to American democracy. So said the commentators. Some might say it's a call to arms. He's certainly not doing anything to tamp down the rage and the hatred. Not at all. But for him to get up there and say no one's above the law, not even the president, seriously? He seriously said that? After using all of the levers of power that he had at his disposal to try to destroy a political enemy, using the FBI, using the DOJ, using the IRS. He did it all, and it continued. His shadow government continued with it even after President Trump was in place. All through the transition, well, even before the election, all through the transition, and then even into a full year into the presidency, spying on an American citizen. That's what the attorney general said specifically. Oh, he got criticized for using the word spying. You're not supposed to say that. It's surveillance, or maybe some other term that's even nicer than that. They found not one person, as I said the other day, not one person guilty of colluding with Russia. And now we're only just beginning to find out who was breaking the law in order to spy, who was lying to federal courts in order to spy. Here is Barack Obama, of all people, lecturing the United States, lecturing Donald Trump about how that no one's above the law in the U.S., not even the president. He also warned of the end of American democracy. Think about that. His administration and his shadow government, if we can call it that, it's been working feverishly for 4+ years to overturn the administration, to overturn the government of a duly elected president. And here he is saying that Donald Trump poses a threat to democracy. He and Hillary Clinton both, all of them, they haven't accepted the results of that Democratic election back in 2016. And think of him giving this speech, by the way, in Philadelphia. After all that he's been doing for the past 2-3 decades even, he gave the speech from the Museum of the American Revolution in Philadelphia. And right behind him, when he was speaking last night, it featured the Constitution of the United States. As I say, 20-some years of attacking and maligning the Constitution. Why, it's a charter of negative liberties. It restrains us. It doesn't really tell us what we should do or what we should impose upon the people. That's what he meant. And so there they were for 8 years trying to undermine the Constitution of the United States, to try to get around the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution, by the way, we've been told this year anyway, it's racist. It was put together by slave owners. And yet here he is last night, draping himself in the Constitution because, well, we got to get those votes. We got to get people to turn out on November 3rd, right? My father's booklet, you can go back to this, in 2013, America Under Attack. This is when the first version of this booklet came out, America Under Attack, and I just noticed some notes from one of his messages. I think it was in 2015. It was even before the presidential election of 2016, and my father, in that sermon, it was in October, I believe, he said that, we need to expand this booklet. There's some hard-hitting truth in there. And we know even more than what we knew in 2013. America Under Attack. I brought the Trumpet issue that from 2018, Saving America from the Radical Left, as well. There's quite a lot to tell about this story, and a lot of it in the Bible, that Antiochus spirit saving Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. But last night, here was Barack Obama. There's a short montage here of some of the nice things he had to say about Joe Biden. Here's 21.
12 years ago, when I began my search for a vice president, I didn't know I'd end up finding a brother. What I quickly came to admire about Joe Biden is his resilience, his empathy, that decency, the belief that everybody counts. That's who Joe is. For 8 years, Joe was the last one in the room whenever I faced a big decision. He made me a better president.
And for what seemed like 8 years, Barack Obama withheld his endorsement of Joe Biden during the campaign season. He just waited and waited and waited. And Joe Biden was sending out all these nice messages to the Obama people. The bracelet there, how much they loved each other. And then finally, right at the last, the Obamas give their endorsement. And it's not exactly a ringing endorsement. Politico had this story last week, and we didn't really have time to get into any of it earlier this week. But given what he said in that speech last night, Politico wrote this: Biden was loyal, I think, to Obama in every way in terms of defending and standing by him, even probably when he disagreed with what Obama was doing, recalled Leon Panetta, Obama's Secretary of Defense. To some extent, he oftentimes felt that loyalty was not being rewarded. So this is an article. All of these former Obama people are speaking up about Joe Biden and Barack Obama and their relationship, and how that, in the words of some of those aides, they said that Biden was someone that was just generally mocked and not taken too seriously. Politico says, you could certainly see technocratic eye-rolling at times, said Jen Psaki, the former White House communications director. Young White House aides frequently mocked Biden's gaffes and lack of discipline in comparison to the almost clerical Obama. They would chortle at how Biden, like an elderly uncle, listen to this, like an elderly uncle at Thanksgiving, would launch into extended monologues that everyone had heard before. So you get the scene, right? The eyes rolling and so on. It says former administration officials treated Biden dismissively in their memoirs. Ben Rhodes, we know about him. He wrote in his memoir that in the Situation Room, Biden could be something of an unguided missile. So this may have something to do with why the endorsements haven't just been coming fast and furious from his friends in the Democratic Party. To be sure, they don't want Donald Trump to win. But then when you think of what Donald Trump has been saying here in recent weeks, this attack from the radical left, this movement that he's resisting against, he says basically that Joe Biden doesn't even know what's going on. I played that clip for you the other day. We're going up against this radical leftist movement spearheaded by the media. That's his biggest opponent, the president said. And then you've got the Democratic Party, and then you've got all of these rising stars, these Marxist stars, like AOC and Kamala Harris, far to the left. Bernie Sanders, of course. What a radical swing in this party. I've heard several commentators over the last few weeks talking about Democrats of old, like JFK, would never be welcome in this party, not in today's Democrat Party. Listen to this montage from Hillary Clinton. She spoke last night as well, and she still has, as you can see here, she still has 2016 on the brain, clip one.
I wish Donald Trump knew how to be a president, because America needs a president right now. For 4 years, people have told me, I didn't realize how dangerous he was. I wish I could do it all over. or worst, I should have voted. If Trump is reelected, things will get even worse. Remember back in 2016 when Trump asked, what do you have to lose? Well, now we know. Our health care, our jobs, our loved ones, our leadership in the world, and even our post office. Vote for honest elections so we, not a foreign adversary, choose our president. And don't forget, Joe and Kamala can win by 3 million votes and still lose. Take it from me. So we need numbers overwhelming so Trump can't sneak or steal his way to victory.
He's still stealing. He used a foreign adversary. That's how he was able to rig that election. And then he's come in. Of course, the post office is the latest conspiracy theory. But there she is. She hasn't let it go. And, you know, that's been in the news just yesterday, I believe. One of the reporters asked the White House press spokesman about whether or not Donald Trump will accept the results of the election. They still are on whether or not Mr. Trump will accept. And they haven't accepted 2016. And they're laying the groundwork to reject the results of a loss in 2020. They're laying the groundwork for it with all this post office nonsense. The dying post office. The post office that's losing billions of dollars. The post office that Democrats could care less about 1 month ago. Now, all of a sudden, it's holding together democracy by a thread. Right after Trump won the election in 2016, Sam reminded me of this. Well, you'll see it here in the montage. But over and again, whether it was Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, they were talking about, oh, yeah, how this is going to be just a really smooth transition. And you hear these words today, and it almost makes your stomach get a little bit sick when you know now what was happening in November and December of 2016, in January of 2017, when they set the trap for Mike Flynn, when they had all those meetings at Trump Tower or in the Oval Office. How are we going to keep spying? How are we going to keep this going? How are we going to turn it into a special investigation? But here they were out in front of the cameras when Donald Trump shocked the world. And listen to what Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Obama were saying then, clip 15.
Then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power.
We are now all rooting for his success in uniting and leading the country. The peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy. And over the next few months, we are going to show that to the world.
My number one priority in the coming 2 months is to try to facilitate a transition that ensures our president-elect is successful.
Over and over and over again. Peaceful transition. Angels of light. You know, if you're sincerely working to that end, are you going to be saying it every time a camera turns on? Oh, by the way, we're going to ensure that this is done peacefully. That's enshrined in the Constitution. It's kind of like that statement that Susan Rice made in that email to herself. Oh, yeah, we did everything by the book, of course. They were spying. They were setting a trap. They were lying to the FISA court. All of this was going on at this time. Right at this time. And yet over and again, how many times did they say, it's going to be very peaceful. He has our full support. We owe this to him, she even said. We're going to show the world. This is one of the hallmarks of our democracy. It's going to be peaceful. That's our number one priority. It certainly didn't sound like that last night. You think they're setting things up for a peaceful transition or a peaceful continuation should Donald Trump get reelected? Or are they going to keep trying to destroy him with one conspiracy theory to the next? I gave you that quote yesterday from Victor Davis Hanson, where he just went right down the line. Everything that they've tried, just bizarre, crazy. All of it. None of it stuck. And now the corrupt investigators are beginning to be caught. Well, that's what President Trump tweeted last night during Obama's speech. You spied on my campaign and you got caught. You got caught. Vice President Biden's his partner in this race is Kamala Harris, the VP candidate. Listen to what she said. Talk about, again, never letting any crises or crisis go to waste. But listen to this to begin with, clip two.
Donald Trump's failure of leadership has cost lives and livelihoods. And while this virus touches us all, we got to be honest, it is not an equal opportunity offender. Black, Latino, and Indigenous people are suffering and dying disproportionately. And this is not a coincidence. It is the effect of structural racism.
The virus is killing more minorities because of structural racism. Now the networks, they love this speech too, because she's a Democrat. But they said it was very relatable, the speech, that it was a soaring speech. And there she is saying that the virus, well, listen to the next clip. She basically says the virus doesn't have eyes, but it can see, and notice what it sees. Clip three.
This virus, it has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other and how we treat each other.
What? What are you talking about? The virus has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other. This is the Wuhan flu that started in China, and somehow, in some weird way that makes no sense, it's connected to racism. Well, I guess it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. Everything is viewed through that lens. You've got to put on the racism glasses, and then that's how you see everything in this world. Listen to what she said. Play clip three again, and let's just see if we can relate to it. Clip three.
This virus, it has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other and how we treat each other.
That does not sound like a speech that's relatable. Or a speech with soaring rhetoric. Far from it. She went on to say how that we have no vaccine for racism. That none of us are free until all of us are free. It all gets back to systemic racism. Well, I've mentioned before how that, as I say, they're not going to let a crisis go to waste. And so they're using the pandemic to come up with this kind of rhetoric. Bizarre, truly bizarre. There was a story, by the way, in the New York Times this morning about police brutality in India. There's a problem we've been told of systemic racism in the United States. It's really bad in law enforcement agencies. I've given you the stats before about the shootings aimed at unarmed black men. I think there were 9 last year, maybe 10, and most of those were black men attacking police officers. Well, in India, at least 1,731 people were killed in custody last year. These are people that were arrested or taken into custody, and then they were just beaten and abused in jail. 1,731. And the New York Times can't really understand why this isn't a bigger deal. Well, how come there's not more of an uprising in India? Well, that's a good question. But what about comparing it to the almost non-existent problem in the United States? There's the occasional incident of police brutality. And in nearly every case, they're dealt with in a court of law. The New York Times, though, says around the world, the death of George Floyd in police custody in Minneapolis in May unleashed searing examinations of police abuse, racism, and injustice, but not in India. That's right. That's right. LeBron James and them, they don't care what happens in India. They, for that matter, they don't even care what happens in their own black communities. It's just those few cases that they can think of where it involved a police officer. How many shootings have there been in Chicago? How many shootings in Chicago over the course of Obama's presidency? Had to have been thousands and thousands. And what was ever done? What movement did that set off? I heard on one of the Fox shows yesterday, I think it's clip 9 or 10, Sam, Larry Elder, he's commenting on the uproar over Baltimore from a few years ago. This is clip 13.
Look at Baltimore, the city that the young lady is talking about. When Freddie Gray died, you're talking about a black mayor. The number one and number two people running the Baltimore Police Department were black. The state attorney that brought the charges against the six officers was black. Three of the six officers was black. The judge before whom two of the cases were tried was black. All city council, Democrat majority, black. The U.S. attorney at the time, Loretta Lynch, is black. And the president of the United States is black. As the comedian Wanda Sykes said, how are you going to complain about the man when you are the man? It is ridiculous. As Leo has pointed out, these cities have been run by Democrats for decades, and they have the nerve to scream systemic racism.
As he's pointing out, the Baltimore incident was during the Obama years, and nearly everyone involved was black, and yet somehow, it served as an indictment on white people. Systemic racism. There's a spirit behind this kind of irrational hatred. There's a spirit behind this kind of bizarre reasoning. Keep in mind, they've got to convince 70 million Americans that, you know what? I love this platform. I love it. It makes sense. It makes sense that Donald Trump's responsible for coronavirus. Listen to Barack Obama pin the blame on Donald Trump last night. Here again. He's responsible for the disease. Clip 5.
Donald Trump hasn't grown into the job because he can't. And the consequences of that failure are severe. 170,000 Americans dead. Millions of jobs gone.
So he's to blame for the jobs lost during the lockdown that the radical left insisted on. And then he's responsible for 170,000 deaths. It was his leadership. Andrew Cuomo's, on the other hand, his self-assessment was that everything worked out beautifully in New York. He's written a book now about his leadership during this crisis. Let me just read to you what's in the publisher's description of the book. It says, Cuomo, keep in mind, 32,000 Americans died of coronavirus in New York City. And President Trump, remember, he was sending them all this PPE equipment. He was sending them ventilators. He was sending them hospital beds. He was sending them hospital beds that they didn't use, that New York did not use. And for several weeks, I think it was a month, they were sending people with coronavirus into nursing homes. And people were dying in nursing homes by the thousands. Here's the publisher's description. Cuomo undertook the impossible. He unified people to rise to the challenge and was relentless in his pursuit of scientific facts and data. He quelled fear while implementing an extraordinary plan for flattening the curve of infection. He and his team worked day and night to protect the people of New York despite roadblocks presented by a president incapable of leadership and addicted to transactional politics. And so they're all speaking from the same talking points, 170,000 deaths, and you can blame it all on Donald Trump. Here's this next clip of Barack Obama saying that no one is above the law, clip six.
No one, including the president, is above the law. And that no public official, including the president, should use their office to enrich themselves or their supporters.
He and his wife, I think they're worth $200 million, and they've never really had a job outside of politics. $200 million. In that article I read yesterday, some of it, from Victor Davis Hanson, he said that President Trump has lost an estimated $1 billion during his 4 years as president. He had to basically set aside the business. So he's lost $1 billion. The Obamas have made tens of millions, and it continues with Netflix and other things after his presidency. President Trump, you can Google this. I think the presidential salary is $400,000 a year. Type in a simple Google search. What does the president do with his presidential salary? It says here, rather than collect his presidential salary, Donald Trump has donated the entire $400,000 to the Department of the Interior, where it has been used to construct and repair military cemeteries. He's donated his entire salary as president to help fix up and repair military cemeteries. And here comes Barack Obama lecturing Donald Trump, saying, you're not above the law, and you're in this just to enrich yourself. The audacity of that man, the arrogance. He was spying on the Trump campaign. He was spying on the Trump presidency, and he got caught. He broke the law. He was above the law in his own eyes. Listen to what he said again about Donald Trump, clip seven.
I never expected that my successor would embrace my vision or continue my policies. I did hope, for the sake of our country, that Donald Trump might show some interest in taking the job seriously. That he might come to feel the weight of the office and discover some reverence for the democracy that had been placed in his care. But he never did.
He never did. He never did revere the office of the presidency. He never did take it seriously. He never took his job seriously. He's just a joke. Now, this is what they were saying about him when he was running, when he was a candidate. He's a joke. Come on, he's a reality star. He's a joke. He'll never be president. And how many of those commentators, how many of the celebrities, how many of those talk show hosts, how many of those politicians? Obama said it himself. Donald Trump is never going to be president of these United States. It's never going to happen. They just laughed at, they laughed at him. They laughed in his face. And here he comes 4 years later, and he said he's never taken it seriously. They've got to get 70 million Americans to agree with him. They've got to get 70 million votes. This was Donald Trump's response to some of the comments Barack Obama has been making. He said this yesterday, the president, clip eight.
Now, President Obama did not do a good job. And the reason I'm here is because of President Obama and Joe Biden. Because if they did a good job, I wouldn't be here. And probably if they did a good job, I wouldn't have even run. I would have been very happy. I enjoyed my previous life very much. But they did such a bad job that I stand before you as president.
And he's right. He's right. A lot of the reason he was voted in 2016 was in response to what was happening during the Obama years. And he also had a pretty sharp campaign aiming for those Rust Belt states. promising to bring jobs back, which he did. But he says here, had they done a better job, I probably wouldn't be here. I was doing just fine, happy in my business. But he set that aside. And then he comes in Barack Obama's estimation, to just enrich himself. Is that the truth? Has he made $100, maybe $200 million as president? He's lost money, as much as a billion. So says Victor Davis Hanson. Here's Obama again, commenting on Donald Trump, clip 9.
For close to 4 years now, he has shown no interest in putting in the work. No interest in finding common ground. No interest in using the awesome power of his office to help anyone but himself and his friends. No interest in treating the presidency as anything but one more reality show that he can use to get the attention he craves.
So says the Netflix king. So says the president that had all those parties with celebrities, all the concerts, all the hip-hop concerts at the White House. This was perhaps the best received president ever in the history of Hollywood. Hollywood loved him. Hollywood paid him after the fact, handsomely. As I say, he's still cashing in on his celebrity. He's still enriching himself on his celebrity. Now, it's true that Donald Trump was a celebrity before coming into the presidency as well. He did have a reality show. But here again, you've got to convince 70 million. You've got to convince a lot of people in America. Just a couple more clips from what Barack Obama said last night. We'll just shift a little bit in the direction of the protests. As I said, that's not a topic. Law and order, that is something you're not hearing at the Democratic Convention. The only thing you get is praise for what they see as peaceful protests. Clip 10.
To the young people who led us this summer, telling us we need to be better, in so many ways, you are this country's dreams fulfilled. You can give our democracy new meaning. You can take it to a better place.
Now, that's pretty astounding. They're all choosing their words very carefully because they know Americans are seeing images of buildings going up in flames and windows being smashed. They're seeing arsonists at work. They're seeing looters help themselves to TVs and other electronics. But he says, to the young people who led us this summer, to the youth who led us, who led the nation this summer, what's been going on this summer? What has happened since Memorial Day? That, as I understand, is the beginning of summer, right? Since George Floyd's death, the youths, the young people, have taken to the streets. And in Barack Obama's mind, they have been leading the way. They have been telling us we need to be better. He says, in so many ways, you are this country's dreams fulfilled. Is that what 70 million Americans think? We'll see. Do they look at the streets of Portland and Chicago and New York City and say, those are my dreams? I've always dreamed of that. Dreams fulfilled. That's pretty astounding that a former president would come out and say, they're the leaders, those protesters in the streets, when it's so obvious those protests have been hijacked by rioters and arsonists, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. And then he said this about President Trump sending in help from the federal government, clip 11.
The commander-in-chief does not use the men and women of our military who are willing to risk everything to protect our nation as political props to deploy against peaceful protesters on our own soil.
Peaceful protesters on our own soil. The problem is the military. They're just political props deployed against peaceful protesters. So he's right there with those that have said the feds have made matters worse. The feds are the cause of the violence. Those out there committing the violent acts, they're justified, whether it's because of George Floyd or because of the feds showing up when they shouldn't show up. So this is the position that they've staked out. This is the position. This is the platform of the new Democrat Party. And as I say, you read between the lines in some of these statements and, well, what happens? What happens if it doesn't go their way in November? I saw this tweet from Andy Ngo. He's the one that collects all the footage of the violence and the looting and the all the damage to property that's been going on over the summer. And he said this, this was a tweet from August 18th. He said, if Donald Trump wins re-election in November, Americans will experience a wave of mass left-wing violence, rioting, and looting, much worse than what we've already experienced so far. That's his projection. That's what he sees. Is he right? That's his estimation. In looking at what's been happening, in looking at what's fueling the riots to this point, what happens if he wins re-election? Well, this is a young man, Andy Ngo, a young reporter. He says, basically, we haven't seen anything yet. Now, given what we know from Bible prophecy, Ezekiel 4 and 5, he's right. Whether it happens right after the election or not, we'll see, but just looking at it in the bigger picture, he is right. What we've seen so far is just a small sampling. Leo Terrell, he's a guest featured on Fox News from time to time. He's a Democrat, or was anyway. He's already come out and announced. He's a black commentator, but he's announced he's voting for Donald Trump because he looks at what's happening on the streets and he's just appalled. This was him on Fox News last night, clip 12.
That the Democrats have destroyed cities where black people live in. They don't care. It's absolute pandering. There is no systemic discrimination in Democratic cities. That's a big lie by Chuck Schumer. Then what you have just mentioned, black people chanting, take away homes from white people. This is a race issue party. They are creating a racial division. And I would love to add some ransom money to catch that guy who knocked that kid heads off. It reminded me of the Rodney King riot and Reginald Denny. We got to stop this race war the Democrats are perpetuating, and we have to get back to common sense. For this election, there's only one man who could solve this problem, and that's Donald J. Trump. We must keep Trump in office, or else this city and this country is going to go to the deep end of socialism.
Well, the sad reality, really, and it's hard not to get swept up into, you know, which side is right here, but neither side is going to solve the problem. And my father has said God intervened to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam, but it was only going to be temporary, and we're certainly seeing. Now, maybe there's another little mini resurgence, but it's still temporary. And when you think about what Andy Ngo tweeted, how that if they're rioting now, and they're basically establishing a platform that justifies the rioting and the violence, if they don't get their way on November 3rd, it's only just the beginning. Here's a black commentator saying, we've got to stop this race war the Democrats are perpetuating. They're fueling the rage. They're fueling the hatred. I've had this clip tucked away at the end of my notes the last few days, but this was following Joe Biden's statement from a week or two ago where he talked about, you know, if I get in there, there's going to be a 3-month mandate on wearing masks all the time. And here is how the president responded to that. I believe this might have been last week, clip 20.
But while Joe Biden would allow rioters and looters and criminals and millions of illegal aliens to roam free in our country, he wants the federal government to issue a sweeping new mandate to law-abiding citizens. He wants the President of the United States, with the mere stroke of a pen, to order over 300 million American citizens to wear a mask for a minimum of 3 straight months.
So that just demonstrates, again, the priorities of the Democratic Party. Go ahead and allow and tolerate the rioting and the looting while you impose this mandate on 300 million Americans to wear a mask. An upside-down world, if ever there was one, at least in the Democrat Party. When we come back, we'll close with a few parting comments. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Over the last four programs, we've given a study at the end of each show on the subject of producing fruit, spiritual fruits. 2 Peter 3 and verse 18, you've heard that repeatedly this past week. And then yesterday, I read to you John 15 and verse 16, which says, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain." It says, "And that whatsoever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you." God wants that fruit. He wants us producing it, and then he wants for it to remain. Ultimately, it lasts for forever. It lasts for eternity. 1 John in chapter 3, verses 18 through 21. Let me just begin in verse 18. It says, "My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth, and shall assure our hearts before him. For if our heart condemn us," it says, "God is greater than our heart and knows all things." So this, speaking of using or abiding by God's truth, his laws, using it, if that fruit remains, it's because we're a doer of the word. In deed and in truth, it says. And then I love verse 21. It says, "Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then we have confidence in God." In other words, if we're doing everything that we can to obey God, to produce that spiritual fruit, if we do all that we can in support of God's work, if we submit our minds and hearts and lives to God and to his rule, if we humble ourselves and follow God's lead, well, then you're going to be able to go through your career, whether it's at God's college or in the church of God or in support of God's church, you'll be able to go forward with Christ-like confidence. Of course, we've got to be careful and make sure it's not, you know, confidence in self. But verse 21 again says, "Beloved, if our heart condemn us not," in other words, if we're obeying God's laws, if we're not being hypocrites, "then we have confidence toward God. Then we can know we're on God's side. We have God on our side. And if God be with us, who can be against us? Even if there's just a few of us working hard to produce, to live productive lives and to produce fruit for God, even if there's just a handful of us, we can go forward with confidence. I've been covering some of this exciting history in the book of Acts for my Epistles of Paul class, and these were scattered brethren that did withstand a lot of persecution. And yet everywhere that they went, if they were scattered abroad because of the persecution, they just took the message of God, they took the truth of God, and they gave it to others, and the work continued to grow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.